Good afternoon. Welcome to the last of this academic year's NAESP Quarterly Aspiring Principals webinar series. Today's webinar is called Becoming a Learning Leader with Dr. Deborah Childs-Bowen. I am Honor Feedy, and I'm the Coordinator of Professional Learning here at NAESP, and I'll be providing support and I'll be a colleague to Dr. Childs-Bowen. Thank you for joining us today. We think you will find this webinar well worth your time as you grow in your professional learning. For principals on the journey to becoming a learning leader, there's often a struggle to find ways to lead learning in your schools. Leadership actions that are intentional, transparent, and collaboratively aligned to student and teacher learning are often required for good results. We hope today's webinar will provide you with some practical strategies you can use in your own professional growth, as well as when working in your school with your teachers, staff, and students. Deborah is the Chief Learning Officer and Consultant for Creative Mind Enterprise. She has more than 30 years of skill and knowledge practice in professional development, executive coaching, and strategic planning. She specializes in leadership development and building capacity and effectiveness through professional learning communities. Deborah has authored numerous articles and toolkits through ASCD, NASSP, and Learning Forward. She's also co-authored the book called The Principal Influence, A Framework for Developing Leadership Capacity in Principals through ASCD. Deborah, we'd like to thank you for joining us this afternoon, and we look forward to what you have to say to us.
Well, thank you, Honor. It's certainly an honor to be here today and to be participating with my fellow educators in the field around the country and possibly around the world, I imagine. So we have an action-packed schedule today, so I'd like to jump right in and get us started. I'd like to frame the hour that we're going to spend together by talking about the desired outcomes that I have for the learning experience that we'll engage in today. The first is that we really want to think about the person, ourselves as learners, and the personal characteristics that kind of inform us in a metacognitive way that we're actually learning things. So just to spend some time being, as I say, a little bit selfish and focusing on ourselves first and what we are, look like, sound like, feel like as a learner. We also are going to spend some time then thinking, as a leader, we also want to think about how does our philosophy, our theory of learning, our understanding of how others learn, get influenced in our leadership actions, and how do we cultivate a culture for others to be very productive learners themselves. Again, we'll think about our theory about learning and the intersection of learning and leadership, and what actions and attitudes and behaviors that we may have to employ to really help ourselves as learners and help others. We'll spend some time, hopefully, with you all being reflective about your upcoming year. What are some challenges or some needs that you know that are student-centered, that you know are going to be part of the challenge that you're facing for the upcoming year? And I would like you all to select something to dig into and think about how you might, as a leader, take some actions to influence others and to reach that particular goal that you're trying to address, that a particular need that you have identified. And then last of all, I want you to be thinking about a resource, a book, an article, a blog, a website, anything that has really impacted your learning recently. And we're going to ask us, everyone, to share one resource. So we create a community bank that we all walk away with some great resources to use. So that's our afternoon. That's our hour together. It's action-packed. I talked about community, and all of you have come together because you have an interest in this. You are learners. You want to know more about your own learning and the learning of others. And so as a community, all of us who are on this webinar, I'd like to get a sense of who's in the room. You know, when I think about webinars, people come to webinars for different reasons. And they sometimes are in the room and sometimes they're out of the room and sometimes they're doing other things. And I understand all of those. But if you would, we have a poll question here.
Actually, Deborah, I would like to ask them to use the chat box for this if I could.
Okay, the chat box will be
fine. To get them going with the chat box. So if you would, great. Put your answer in the chat box.
Yeah, just pick one of those A, B, C, D. We want to get a sense of who's in the room, and we want you to have a sense of who's in the room so you'll know who your colleagues are.
And as they're doing this, I will actually, you know, let you know how we've got, like, several assistant principals. We have a teacher leader coach in the room, a principal from Washington State, yay. Who else do we have? We have central office person, Rosa.
Yes, and I have assistant principals.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? And then a principal, another principal.
So
it looks like you've got a school librarian, yay, and a school counselor. Isn't that lovely?
Lovely. I just saw an article recently that said school counselors deserve professional learning too. Shout out for the school counselor.
We have a brand new assistant principal. Isn't that lovely?
That's wonderful. And I love what the principals are modeling, continuous learning. They're on the call and they're continually learning. Well, thank you all for sharing that. And, you know, we talk about lifelong learning and how important it is in education in particular to be a lifelong learner. And so I pulled a few quotes that I thought were helpful in getting our mind in that framework. And, you know, Venice and Nana started a long time giving us a lot of leadership direction. And they talk about successful leaders taking responsibility for their own learning. And being a lead learner, especially in education, I believe, you have to be responsible and committed to that, that you are a continuous learning, as is the example that our principals have. Also, Schlechte talks about if you really are going to help teachers and other educators in your building to learn and improve their practice, you have to be a continual learning. So you have to be constantly improving your practice as well. And last of all, I love what Julia Child says. You'll never know everything about anything, especially something you love. And I want to believe that everyone on this call loves their work. Maybe not every day, but loves their work. We have our challenges. Loves the work and the outcomes of the students they work for. So being selfish, I want you to reflect for a little while over the next couple of slides. And think about yourself. Think about your learning experiences and think about who you are as a learner. If someone asked you who you are as a learner, how would you describe yourself as a learner? And when you're in the learning process, how do you even know that you're learning? I had recently had some electricians come to my home to install a orb or chandelier that had been in my garage far too long. And three of them came. And they were all under 25, I believe, but very skillful, the master electrician was. And one of them had, the master electrician had an apprentice with him. The apprentice couldn't have been more than 16 or 17 years old in my eyesight. He was very quiet and very, you know, withdrawn, sort of. And then there was a third one who had a cell phone out and leaned over my kitchen counter the entire day, just kind of clicking and acting like he knew everything. So the work was done by the master electrician. I'm telling you this story because they were training the apprentice. Both of them said that he was in training. And I noticed the way that the different styles of training happen. The master electrician would tell the apprentice what he was needing in terms of tools and equipment and why he needed it. The other guy who was leaning over the counter would say, no, that's not the right thing. Get this other thing. Don't you know what you're supposed to do? And that's how the day went. So I kind of frowned upon the latter style and I was more attracted to the other. So I watched this young man, the apprentice, going through the day, learning the practices. They did other things in my home, learning the practice. And so at the end of the day, I asked him, what did you learn today? And his solemn, withdrawn face spun around to me with the biggest smile I saw ever. He said, I learned how to hang a chandelier today. I know that you have to have this, 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 and this, and you have to do these wires this way and that. And I thought, oh my goodness, I wasn't sure he was learning, but he had such joy in his eyes and his face when he talked about his learning. just a little scenario to help us get in the mood of thinking about your learning. So what I'm asking you to do is to think about yourself as a learner. And what are some of the personal characteristics that you would use? What are some of the terms you would use to describe yourself as a learner? And we're just going to ask you to go ahead and type those in the chat box, if you would.
Okay, and I will read them as people think about that and type it in. Wayne says a reader, flexible, risk taker, reader, listener, curious, reflective, researcher, curious, collaborative. Oh, I like that one.
I love them.
Explorer, reflective. Perseverance, reflective, curious, authentic.
Aggressive.
Aggressive. Oh, writer. Lots of readers.
Yes.
Oh, relational.
I love it. I love the reflective continues to come up. Questioning, I see.
Ooh, good.
Uh-huh. Studying and assimilating.
Coachable.
Uh-huh.
Verbal processor. That's nice.
Yes.
Curious and rational.
I love it. I love it. Well, as I look at what you all are saying and I look at what some of the research tells us, there's some key pieces that you all are talking about as you describe yourself that continually pop up in the research for us around the same sort of terms, like the effort that goes with that aggressiveness, I think I said, that you all, someone mentioned. Passionate comes up in the literature a lot. Looking for results. Motivated, which is what you guys were talking about. Very positive attitudes have a growth mindset that are looking for results. They have a sense of success in their ability in the past, and then they have a sense of confidence in their ability to do well in the future. Curiosity and all of that are part of that. So when we think about learning and think about ourselves as learners, these are some of the things that we carry in to our schools and in our work that we're thinking about. I have a video here that I'd like to show to you all that will allow us to get this might be the challenge to, I'm going to get it started. Oh, there we go. So this video, folks, is about 8 minutes. I might not let it run the entire time. Just want you to get the gist. A lot of you know this information, but I want to just refine it because I think it helps to, revisit it because I think it helps to refresh our memory, our understanding of how others learn, how adults learn, and how students learn. So we take what we know about our own learning styles, our own selves as learners, and we think about how we impact others. So let's look at this for a second.
Alexander Kapp, and was picked up by another German, Rosenstock, in 1921, who used it to refer to the special requirements of adult education. It was first introduced to English speakers in 1926 by Eduard Lindemann, who emphasized education in life and through experience, continuing throughout adulthood. He considered an early proponent of lifelong learning. However, the term was popularized when it was adopted by Malcolm Knowles in the latter part of the 20th century to describe his theory of adult learning. Knowles proposed 6 assumptions about adult learners, which determine how teaching of adults should proceed. In the literature, you will find reference to 4, 5, and 6 assumptions. This is because 2 were added later as his theory developed. His assumptions are, firstly, the need to know. Adults need to know why they are learning something, what the benefits are of knowing it, and what they risk by not learning it. Evidence suggests that when adults know how learning will happen, what learning will occur, and why it is important, they will respond more positively to learning experiences. This leads to a need to include adults in deciding what it is they learn and setting goals and plans for their learning. The second assumption is self-concept. Adult learners have a self-concept of being responsible for their own decisions. They are naturally self-directed in their lives and in their thinking, which may lead to self-management of learning. This has 2 elements. Firstly, taking ownership of learning in terms of making decisions about what and how to learn. And secondly, self-direction includes self-management, motivation, and monitoring. self-concept is likely to be context dependent. That is, it will vary between different learning situations. The third assumption is experience. Adult learners have experience, and that experience is more diverse than is the case with children. Learning can therefore draw on this experience much more fully. However, adults may also have ingrained ideas from this experience, leading to bias or single-mindedness. Adults tend to associate experience with who they are. Their identity is defined in terms of what experiences they have had. All of this means that learning needs to be associated with existing knowledge, and learning activities situated in real experience. Learning should be active, constructive, and collaborative, and learners also need to recognize that sometimes unlearning is required. The fourth assumption is readiness to learn. Adult learners need learning to be timely and relevant and focus on what is useful in their particular context and situation. Pratt identifies two dimensions along which adults vary in different learning situations. Direction is how much assistance is needed and is a factor of the learner's competence in the subject area and their general dependency. Support is how much encouragement is needed from others. It's a factor of their commitment and their confidence in their ability to learn. The fifth assumption is orientation to learn. Adult learning is life-centered and focuses on tasks and problems rather than on subjects. The learning needs to be contextualized, and experiential learning is most effective. Cole proposed an experiential learning cycle where learners have concrete experiences of the here and now. They observe and reflect on those experiences. They generalize from those experiences to develop concepts and theories, and they then test these generalizations in new situations. Finally, the sixth assumption is motivation to learn. It may be extrinsic, for example, through rewards and grades, but in adults, it is more likely to be intrinsic, for example, self-satisfaction, enjoyment, having choice and control over what is learned, and value, feeling that what is learned is worthwhile. All of this contrasts to pedagogy, where Knowles argues there is an assumption that the teacher leads and makes key decisions, that learners are dependent, with natural dependency decreasing from childhood to adolescence. The learner's own knowledge and experience is not considered important. Knowledge comes from teachers and textbooks. Readiness to learn is focused on what they are told they need to know. The learning is subject-centered. Motivation is extrinsic, focusing on grades and pleasing others. Knowles characterized andragogy as a process model of learning. A facilitator considers the activities and steps needed for learners to acquire knowledge and skills, rather than a content model, such as pedagogy, where the teacher decides on what will be taught and how it will be presented to the learner. Knowles' work has its critics. Some argue that the assumptions do not apply equally to all adult learners, who are a diverse group with a huge range of backgrounds and experiences, or even to any one individual all of the time. For example, self-direction can be affected by fear. Lack of confidence can create dependency and reduce motivation. And not all adult learners have a clear view of what their learning direction should be. Others argue that Knowles creates a false dichotomy between adult and child learners, arguing that children have experiences that shape their learning as well and benefit from contextualized experiential learning. It can be argued that andragogy is not so much a theory of adult learning, but a framework for good teaching. Later, Knowles did adjust his position, acknowledging the need to look at which assumptions apply when looking at a particular learning context, rather than looking specifically at the age of the learner.
Some of this information is helpful for us to think about as we're building our practice to support other other adults in our setting. So I just want you to have that as a backdrop for your thinking and your kind of dissonance maybe even around andragogy and pedagogy. So if we take some of that basic knowledge and think about learning and how adults learn and how students learn, for adults when we are in education, we're often talking about engaging in professional learning. And the literature has told us that in most cases, they're kind of like five big purposes for professional learning. Sometimes you just need to have a little bit of information about something. It's not a deep dive into into whatever you're learning, but you need to have an awareness of it. Sometimes just developing an awareness level is just a beginning step to what you might scaffold onto later. Sometimes you're really trying to build a deep content knowledge or deep knowledge. So you're building the depth of someone's knowledge, and that is another a purpose that we engage adults in. And oftentimes what we have really learned in education is that the first two we had done some of that quite a bit in years beyond, but now we've learned that it's about translating what we know and what we're able to do into our own practice, just like with students. So how do we translate it into practice, making sense out of it? And then how do we provide as leaders opportunities for people to practice, recognizing just as Knowles has said and others have said, that people come to learning and understanding at different rates and at different times. And as leaders, we have to manage all of that. We have to be able to assess where people are in the innovation or in the practice, and we need to be able to think about what are the appropriate supports and the level of push and support that is needed. And then, of course, reflection is another piece of that that helps to you with everything that you do. In terms of our learning around reflective practice, it is indispensable in education. So if we think about those five purposes, some of the ways that we can think about support, when I think about it, I frame it in these four areas. I think about our intentionality. And when you all were describing yourselves as learners, you could see that you all are very intentional. The reading that you're engaged in, the active learning that you're engaging in, the listening that you're engaging in, and the kind of passion that you have for your work. All of those suggest that you have a intentionality for the learning. But sometimes, just as we know, our intentions are often good, but we don't walk them all the way through. So really being cognizant and mindful of being intentional about how we as leaders can be open-minded, doing the things that you said, like asking questions, digging deeper, probing, clarifying questions. Those are skills that we as leaders need to develop if we have not developed them as part of our assets. Transparency is another one, and I put the picture of the glass house over to the side because I think it's very important that you, am I muted? Can everyone hear me?
Yes, you're fine.
Okay, I wanted to see what Dwayne was saying. I'm not sure. But...
Oh, I asked him to go ahead and type in his question.
Okay, great. So Dwayne, I'll get with you in a moment. So transparent, put the house over there because really as leaders, if we want to, as you all said, you're risk takers, we have to be transparent. So as a model of a lead learner, we want to be talking about our learning. We want to be showing where we have productive struggle in the learning. We want to be sharing our passion for the learning. We want to be taking the resources that we have and inviting others to look at them too and to engage with them, and really showing our vulnerability with that. I think about as I first became a principal, how I used to hoard information and dish it out here and there, and I was drowning. It's finally when I realized that I needed everyone to know everything just about, that's when we started to flourish. So really making sure that you become transparent and open with your own learning. Collaboration is another one. That we can't just anoint ourselves as lead learners. We also are co-learners. We're not always leading the learning. we're learning alongside others as well. Because as principals and assistant principals, we cannot know all the subject matter in our school. We definitely need to know some and a good bit of it in order to support teachers, but we can't know the level of expertise that often our teachers have. So having that sense of, I'm a co-learner, I'm transparent about, I know this, but I don't understand that, I want to know more so that I can support you better, those are all ways that we can reflect those sorts of things. Results. Results are key. Results are absolutely key. We are in an era where we have to be focused on the learning that is aligned to student needs, that looks at the relationship for educator needs, and looks at the relationship for leader needs. So students are guiding our learning in school. So making sure that we're focusing on results and we're constantly monitoring. We're monitoring how people are progressing with their own learning, with their own transfer of the learning into practice. And what's the practice looking like? Do we need to bring a coach in? Do they need to be more focused in a PLC on this? So all of those sorts of things are ways that we can think about it. So support is absolutely key. So what we want you to think about at this point is, given those four areas and thinking about your context, what would be the top factor of these four that you would want to be mindful of in your setting moving forward into this next year? Thinking about yourself.
I launched the poll, and if people are responding right now. Broderick says, what already teachers know and what they need to know. Jose writes in intentional.
So Braddock is really thinking about assessing, you know, what's the current knowledge and where do we need to go? Sometimes we don't know. Sometimes we don't know where we need to go. Yet we have students' data, student needs to help guide us.
I like what Cher says about the collaboration will lead to accomplishing the desired results.
Mm-hmm. Collaboration is absolutely key. Absolutely key.
Okay, so it looks like we'll end the polling and share the results. Mm-hmm. There we go, 54%. Yeah.
I am excited to really see that. First of all, I'm excited that each of you selected the one that you needed to really focus on and be mindful of. So I hope you'll hold that tight as you leave the webinar too and think about that as you go into the next year. It excites me to see collaboration and to see collaboration as a high factor for all of you, because this is a shift in the education landscape for us. We've been so isolated for so long. It is far better for us to collaborate than it is. It's not necessarily easy. And here's the key. We didn't receive the learning skills and assets and tools typically in our education programs that fostered collaboration. So we have to be mindful as leaders that many people are in our schools and they really don't have those skill sets. They haven't been provided. So as Braddock was saying, those are the things you want to assess. Maybe we know teachers are really skilled in the content areas, but when we bring them together in teams, the collaboration's just not happening. Well, maybe they need some tools and some processes and some protocols to help them to get there. So these are things for us to think about as leaders.
Okay.
I also want you to think about what your core beliefs are between what you know about yourself as a learner, what you know about adult learners, and leadership. If your core beliefs are what other people would say, are they the same? Would they say they're the same as what you believe? And if not, we go back to the transparency piece that we talked about earlier, that we want to be more transparent and more communicative about our beliefs around the importance of learning and leadership. Leadership at all sectors of our building. And being mindful of that. So I just throw that out for you to be thinking about when you're shaping your theory of learning. And I would really encourage you to write about what you believe around learning and leadership so that you refine it and that you have your elevator speech for anyone you come in contact with and you share that with it and you struggle with it with them and you're challenged by the questions that they ask you around that. So moving along, let's think about leadership learning actions then? If we know the purposes of engaging in adult learning, we know some of the things that we as lead learners need to be think about in terms of being intentional, collaborative, and the like in terms of supporting the learning of others, then what are some things that we can do as lead learners to really model, support, grow our own understanding and skill, and help others to see, invite others in to do similar things? So I've just kind of made a laundry list of things. I've just hit on a few of them for us to think about. I particularly love being for principals to be students for a day and to really just kind of go from classroom to classroom as a student and really engage in the assignments and the tasks and the tests and the activities and the readings that students are engaged in, to be answering the questions and that sort of thing. So the students are seeing the principal as a learner continuously and saying that they came and they sat right next to us and did the same thing we were doing. And, oh, by the way, they got answer two wrong and I had to explain it to them or whatever. So it really shows that vulnerability and risk-taking. I am a really soapbox person. I stand on the soapbox when it comes to whenever we're thinking about learning, especially in education, we must be thinking about continuous improvement. And I'm a proponent of making sure that we adopt some cycle of continuous improvement for us to be working through as a school, whether it be in our teamwork or school-wide or whatever, that we understand that we start from a point of student needs, that we use student data, that we think about if these are the student needs, then what are the educator needs that we need to engage in? And then if we know what both of those needs are, then what do we know already and what do we need to know? So what's the learning that we need to engage in? And what are the strategies and decisions that we're going to agree on that we're going to use and employ in our classrooms? And how are we going to support each other in that process going through that cycle? And then how are we going to test it to be sure that they really are making the impact on both student and educator goals? So continuous improvement is absolutely key as part of the learning process. I think modeling lessons, modeling strategies in classrooms, using protocols in faculty meetings and being a part of a professional learning community, journaling, and of course, social media are a lot of the things that we do. You all probably have a laundry list of other things that you could add to this list, and feel free if you have ideas to just put them in the chat box.
And if I could suggest, when you make those suggestions for everybody else, be sure that you select all panelists and attendees. If it's all panelists, it just comes to us. We want everybody to get this information.
Yes, I love it. I love the locus of control. That's right. We need to recognize what the locus of control is. And part of this is about making sure that we're intentional. And I always hesitate when I say this, of empowering others. It's not like we have the power, and actually we often do, but really inviting others to engage and to be leaders themselves. So I also like to hold up the professional learning standards because I think they're extremely important. They come from Learning Forward, and they give us a lot of guidance. If you're not familiar with them, I would encourage you to take a look at them because they really do help to guide the professional learning that should be taking place in our schools and in our districts across this nation. And you can see that there's seven of them, and leadership is right in there with it. They all are connected, and also you can look at them individually as well. So leadership is really about us developing other people and advocating for support systems that help with professional learning. So when we think about the learning that we help to others to engage in as a lead learner, we want to think about that transfer because it's not enough for us to just know it. We've got to do it. And we have to create the environment and the supports that people can practice, they can have success, they can also fail, and they can fail forward. And that they know risk-taking and encouragement and learning from lessons is part of the culture that we're trying to build as a learning environment. So again, I just made a list of things that I think that are very helpful. There's just a few. The list could go on and on and on. But professional learning communities, when done well and right, not just having a meeting, are terribly powerful or incredibly powerful tools for us to use. Learning walks and teacher rounds, that's part of that invitational that I think someone said earlier. Locus of control. Teacher rounds are a wonderful way to get teachers engaged in their own learning and creating their own awareness around their practice and refining it. Coaching, using your instructional coaches in ways that will help not only on an individual basis, but also with the teams. Model classrooms. And then I'm a real proponent of if you have the culture and the trust in your school, encouraging people to videotape their lessons and to engage with others in reflective dialogue and refining their lessons just as if they were doing a lesson study. So think about the ways then that it's not enough that we sent them to a professional learning environment or we had a vendor come in and do 3 days of blah, 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 blah. We then have to have a system of support to help them to be able to transfer that knowledge and skill practice in their context. One of the resources that I think are really powerful is a book by Lois Easton. It's called Powerful Designs, and she's done several editions of it. So when we're thinking about protocols and designs, she kind of lays out about 21 of them that we can think about that support us as lead learners in thinking about what's the best design based on the need that we're trying to develop. So this book is a nice resource. She cuts the book. She really kind of slices the book in several different dimensions. You will have her describe each one of those designs. But she also has a table in there that I love that talks about the who. So beyond classroom teachers, who else needs to be a part of the strategy or the design? She also gives information on how long they generally last, the duration, that sort of thing like, and then which designs are best for like curriculum, which are best for like learning communities, which are best for data, which are best for problem solving. So it gives you kind of a slice of looking through all of the designs and matching it to your needs, and also provide you information on whether or not you need an external or internal facilitator, the level of administrator involvement, and also the costs or whether you could do it in or out of school. So I just offer that resource up to you as one that I think is very helpful in this conversation around learning. So now let's move to thinking about ourselves and moving forward into the next year. You probably have some areas of need that you know are going to pop up for your students in the next year. Whatever your locus of control, whatever your role is, what I would like you to think about are what are those things that are going to change in your school or your setting next year? And what is the impact that it might have on professional learning efforts in your schools, and what supports might be needed as you think about that? So earlier I asked you to think about a student-focused, a student-centered need that you could get into your mind, that you could really play with and think about how you might plan a theory of action that you, as a lead learner, whatever role you're in, could engage in this upcoming school year. So I'm going to give you a moment to just take a pause and think about what that might be. I'm also going to ask you, if you don't have a piece of paper, I'm going to ask you to pull out a piece of paper because I want you to be able to jot down your thinking and be able to come back to it if you don't have paper on your laptop, whatever you're working on, so that you have the thinking that you've engaged in. I'll give you about a minute to think about it.
I meant 42.
Okay. All righty. So here's what I'd like to offer as a way that you might be able to engage with that thinking. We're going to start from the right-hand side of this chart. And thinking about that student-focused need, what's your outcome for students? Just take a few seconds to write down what would the outcomes look like. If everything was perfect in a perfect world around that need, what would that outcome look like?
Do you want them to chat it in if they have it?
If they want to, but I think it'd be more to their benefit if they have it in their possession.
Okay.
I'd love to see it, but I really prefer that they have it. So, folks, with that in mind, whatever your student-focused goal, and someone's, Matthew talked about the SMART goals and how key they are, and that's absolutely true, Matthew. Thank you for raising that. That the SMART goal, whatever that, and you can make it SMART later, but right now, whatever that focus is, think about what would students be doing and saying and displaying in terms of their productions or their behaviors. Just jot down some of the things that you would be seeing around that goal. What would it look like? What would it sound like? What would you see? What would you hear? How would you know that your outcome is happening? Do yourself a bulleted list or write it out however you want. I'll give you some time to do that as well. So now that we know what student production or behaviors and actions we would see happening, what is it that we will need teachers to be doing in their practice to have realized those student actions? What will a teacher's practice look like? What will their actions and their productions look like associated with that student need? Again, a bulleted list to describe what you would see, what you would hear teachers doing specifically around the student outcome that you wrote. I'm glad I added the team learning actions. I was hesitant about adding it for this particular one, but I'm glad because when I think back to the poll and what you all said that you wanted to be most intentional about, the majority of you, it was around collaboration. And when I think about the teamwork and embracing common vision, common goals, common SMART goals, Matthew, as you talked about, those are important pieces. So let's think for a minute. If there is going to be involvement of teams to achieve the student outcome that you wrote, what do we need to see happening in the teamwork? What would it look like? What would you hear? What would people be doing? What would they be using as resources? Jot down anything that will help you to elaborate later.
I like what Hinanza wrote, teachers to be the facilitators and letting students take charge of their learning.
So teens would be struggling with that, thinking about, well, not necessarily struggling with that, but they would be tackling that, thinking about ways that they could come to agreement and studying ways that they release more of the responsibility to students and have it helping students to take charge. And then you would see those actions happening back to the right in all the team members' classrooms, maybe with different styles, but it would still be happening. So let's move to the last column to the left. And that's about you. Given your initial student outcome and the student actions you want to see and the teacher actions you want to see and the team actions you want to see, what things do you need to be doing? What would you need to be doing to make that happen, to realize that student outcome in the most ideal way? Jot down your ideas, your thoughts, anything that's helpful from today's webinar. From your own experience and knowledge, the ideas that are in the chat box, anything that helps you. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the beginning of your theory of action. I encourage you to come back to it wherever you've written it and continue to play with it because that's a beginning kind of a roadmap for you on your journey next year and let it become second nature to you as a process that may help you as you're moving forward with other efforts. I don't want to leave without saying evaluating whatever professional learning that we are engaging in is absolutely key. So if nothing else, I'd like to just say, turn to the lovely work that Gusky has done in terms of helping us to think, we don't want to stop and just say, are people just satisfied with the information and, you know, the food maybe and the handouts and that sort of thing like that. We want to ask the question that I asked of that young apprentice. What did you learn? What did you learn? And how might you use it in your practice? And then thinking about it, we might think about it from an organizational standpoint. Or we might push people to think about how are you going to use this knowledge and skill and how will it change your practice from what you've done? And then, of course, ultimately, we want to see it really manifesting itself in student outcomes. So as a lead learner, we have to think about the ways that we will continually assess the professional learning. And that includes, oh, I have so much else that I could share with you, but it includes us thinking about how people come to the learning of new innovations in different times and in different ways, and how we differentiate the support we provide to people and the opportunities. So we're almost at the end, and I don't want to miss this, what I think is going to be a great opportunity for us to continue as a community of learners to share the great knowledge that and experiences that we have engaged in ourselves. So I would love to see this happen in the chat box. I would love it if you would type in a book, an article, and please let us know the source if you can. Even if you can't tell us the volume and all that, at least let us know if it's NAESP or, you know, Wallace Foundation or something like that. Just let us know where it comes from so that we can find it eventually. So a book, a blog, a website, anything that you think that may be, that has impacted your learning.
So let's be sure you write all panelists and attendees, if you would.
The coach approach to educational leadership, I love it. Way of the Shepherd. The Aspire, oh yes. Baruti's book, yes. Lost at School, I haven't heard of that one. The Growth Mindset Coach, yes. John Safir, yes. Baruti, anything Baruti, I'm right, you're right.
He's good.
Yes, he is. The Connected Child, yes.
Oh, I love the Dare to Lead. I love that one.
Standards-Based Learning in Action, yes.
Oh, Steve Covey.
Covey, yes. Thank you for that. I love Is My School Better? Yes. Yes.
Dare to Lead has come up several times by Brenna Brown.
And vulnerability. I was just on a call with a superintendent assistant soup yesterday when we were doing some planning for a leadership summit, and they are going to dig into her vulnerability book because they really are pushing this piece about leaders, their leaders being even more vulnerable in their schools. Again, it's the modeling, it's the transparency that we talked about earlier. Crucial Conversations, yes, Habits of Mind. I gotta get this Lost at School. That's
I know, Lost at School comes up a lot.
Yes. Khalil Gibran, I love it. Wow, guys, this is wonderful. This is wonderful that you all are sharing at such a great level. Well, I want to leave
you. The Power of Nice.
The Power of Nice, yes. Well, as you continue to enter those in, I want to leave you with some parting thoughts about leading the way as a lead learner. And just six key points that stood out to me from this source that really seemed to resonate with this topic area. Be open to uncertainty. And I think in those first descriptors that you put in about yourself, you all are a community that is that, does that. Be a co-learner. It's not enough for us to say we're lead learners. We need to know when we lead and when we sit back and we follow. And when we sit side by side, because it's about us building trust and a culture of learning and safety in that learning. Be vulnerable. We talked about that. Acknowledge when you don't know. You build trust that way. You build the trustworthiness of your leadership that way. Share openly and how you're learning. It's that passion, because you are passionate about it and you shared that. Be aware of your own mindset. Sometimes we think we have a growth mindset and we're operating from an asset stance, but others might tell us that we're not. And we want to be mindful of that and be able to hear what they're saying about us. Position student learning always first, and I don't think I have to say that to you all that are on this webinar, but it's key. That's the basis of all the learning that we're engaging in our schools. And make room for everyone. It's the equity piece, you guys, not only in terms of their diversity of opinion, their way of learning, but and their voice, lots of different other dimensions. So I leave you with those parting thoughts as we think about any questions or any things that you want to bring up at the end here. I'll hand it to you, Honor.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for all of those ideas and strategies. I think the engagement on this webinar has been wonderful. I want to go back to, there was a question early on. We have so many resources here that people have listed.
That's going to be a great resource for everybody to be able to go back to.
Yes, yes. Please, as you, are there any other questions that you would like us as a group to talk about? Bradrick early on asked the question, how can principals give mini instructional lessons in weekly faculty meetings? Any ideas on that?
Oh, I think that's great, because generally I think that's a great idea. I think you put it in as part of your culture that you want to have as a regular thing in your faculty meetings. And Braddock, I don't think it also always has to be the principal who's leading that. So some of the times you want to pull on different members of the faculty to do those mini lessons around things that you all have been observing. Let's take, for instance, that you've been doing walks and you're identifying an area of need. So as a transparent leader, you talk about, as I've walked in the last 2 weeks, this is what I'm seeing that that's really good around this practice. Here are some things that I think we could pay stronger attention to. I'd like to take these 15 minutes to do a little mini lesson. Let's talk about it. Or I've asked so-and-so to do a mini lesson. I would make it as part of the routine learning around with my faculty meetings. Because one of the things that and I'm sure you all do it, is that as leaders, we really want to get away from that telling during faculty meetings. We can put those on the website, in meeting notes and everything. Let's use those faculty meetings as learning opportunities, and a mini lesson would be great.
So we have 5 more minutes. We will entertain any lingering questions you might have. Please type them in the chat box. Anything for the good of the order? Deborah, I have a question as we're giving them a little bit more time. For principals and or any kind of leader, you know, their own professional learning is like, and reflection is like one of the most biggest challenges they have. What strategy would you suggest folks, leaders, build into their weekly schedule as far as their own professional, you know, growth?
Oh, I love that. So I'm imagining that all of you are get journals or EdWeek or something that you is your favorite. I believe that you have to put those on your desktop and set a time to spend time digging into them, mm-hmm. so that you're learning. Or if you have in your school time where everyone is reading at a certain time, read then. Mm-hmm. Then while others are reading, and let people see you reading, you know. Have it flagged that I'm going to read this on Tuesday during the reading time because this is something that I'm particularly interested in and I want to know more about it. Or I know we've been struggling with it, so that's one way that I think. I think the other thing that I didn't touch on, and it might not be quite on target with what you're asking, Honor, is that as leaders, we need to be connected and networked too. So what associations like NAESP... I'm just going to, yeah, are we connected to? And what's our community of practice that we're connecting to? How have we networked with others in there so that we have our own network of people that come together? Someone was telling me, I was reading, either they were telling me or I was reading somewhere recently that a group of leaders, I was reading about this, a group of teacher leaders come together at 5:45 in the morning online to talk and learn about different subjects. And they only meet for about 15 or 20 minutes or maybe a half an hour. But they do this on a regular basis. I think as principals and assistant principals, we've been isolated for far too long. We could do a better job of networking with each other, creating our own professional learning communities as well. So I know I got that a little bit off.
That's wonderful. On that note, could you go to the next slide?
Sure.
I would like to encourage you. We are 2 weeks to the NAESP conference, Professional Learning Conference, Pre-K 8 Principals Conference, July 10th through 12th in Spokane, Washington. I would like to encourage all of you, if you haven't registered already, to please go to the website address, the link at the bottom there, and register. Come to Spokane and meet with your fellow leaders and build that that networking and learning community so that you're not on your own and you have a community of practice. A lot of people who've never been to one of our conferences, they say the best thing there is to network and of fellow leaders to learn with others and to go back home and have that network on hand. So I would like to encourage you to come to beautiful Spokane, Washington. And we have an outstanding lineup of keynote, concurrent, and breakout speakers. There will also be creative learning formats provided in the exchange by our Center for Innovative Leadership Fellows, Andy Jacks and Hamish Brewer. That's a new thing we have. As well as our innovation rotation session where you will, you can rotate between three different speakers utilizing a digital device all in one session. At the end of the program, there's going to be lots of opportunities for you to engage and network with, fellows. There's different meetings and different sessions for you to do that. So encourage you all to go to our website and look at that. Any last words, Deborah? We really find this a wonderful, session for them, and I hope that you've enjoyed it as well.
I've enjoyed it very much, and my last words are for Sherry Duncan. I hope I didn't, tear up your first name. Sherry, hang in there. As a first-year principal, you are a learner. There is always a learning curve for everyone. Be curious, ask questions, ask for a coach, beyond a mentor, not someone just to tell you that you need a mentor too, but you want a coach. And if that's someone that you have to get outside of your district or outside of whatever, I'd say create a network with other new principals. Learn together, struggle together. That's my last advice, and I want to thank you all for a wonderful opportunity to share a few thoughts about becoming a learning leader. Thank you.
And last thing, for those of you that have asked, this session has been recorded, and it will be available for download on our website at www.naesp.org/webinars. It's a free download for members. And the, as well as the presentation slides. So thank you again, everyone. I hope you have a good afternoon. Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you. Bye, everyone. Have a wonderful summer and a fabulous next school year.